It all started with a dream.
This is so stupid!
Been waiting my whole life for this. I got some things to say.
I'm still slowly dying, but hey, we all are.
All right, so the Super Bowl is coming up this weekend, everybody. And if your church is like my church, y'all are going to not have church. Instead, you'll have a Super Bowl watching party.
Which is great.
It is common. Most church Super Bowl parties are perfectly legal. But a few regulations could cause the NFL to throw a penalty flag at you. At your congregation.
That would be bad. We don't have that kind of money.
In fact, a few years ago, Super Bowl parties appeared to be in jeopardy. Many churches canceled their plans after the NFL began legally objecting to virtually all public showings, including those hosted at religious organizations. In 2007, Fall Creek Baptist Church received a letter from the NFL informing them their planned Super Bowl party violated copyright laws. So, yeah. It's a big organization, but they weren't above coming to one specific church.
That's insane.
Who advertised.
What are they, like a $1 billion a year company? Multi-billion?
Yeah. Oh, the league objected to the church showing the game on a giant screen. As news spread, other churches began to cancel their events. After substantial backlash, however, the NFL amended their rules to allow churches to show the Super Bowl regardless of screen size. But despite the change, other regulations remain in place. So we need to make sure that your church is following these four guidelines. And this comes from factsandtrends.net from an article by Aaron Earls called Four Guidelines to Keep Your Church Super Bowl Party from Being Illegal.
Which is always good because always good. Jesus wants us to obey the laws. I'm just throwing that out
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So number one, first thing that you need to make sure you're not doing, don't charge admission.
Oh, dang it.
Churches cannot charge for people to watch the game. Donations can be accepted to offset costs of food and other items, but you cannot require a payment of any kind at this event. Using the event to collect canned goods for a local food pantry and similar charity-driven promotions is perfectly allowed, though.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. That would be really cool.
Number two, the location matters. The specific allowance from the NFL says that a church is free to show the game in its usual place of worship, as in within your normal church building.
Right.
It cannot rent a different facility, like an auditorium or a theater, specifically to watch the game, even if the only people invited are people from your church.
That's interesting.
The allowances are only with respect to church property, not rented spaces. Now, if your church has a big auditorium with the giant screen, that's absolutely fine because it's on your property.
Now, that would be interesting to figure out churches that are like plants, so they meet in schools.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. That's a little wonky.
It is.
Number three, know the rules about names and logos. Although the NFL famously protects the use of the phrase Super Bowl, as in a lot of people can't even put that in their ads. Can't say Super Bowl Sunday. I believe the common thing is to say Superb Owl.
Yeah, there you go. In reference to
it.
But I don't like owls because they're birds and I don't like birds.
Churches are actually free to refer to the game by name, mention the teams playing, and use the NFL in their promotional materials. However, they cannot use any logos. So they can't use the NFL logo. They can't use the Super Bowl logo. Can't use the team's logos in any of their advertisements.
All right. Can I use like the XLF, whatever it's?
No, that's the Super Bowl logo.
No.
You mean just use the Roman numerals.
The Roman numerals for the...
Yeah.
Okay.
They can't
copyright. But I can't use the logo that they create. Okay.
They can't copyright the Roman numeral, I don't think.
Gotcha.
And lastly, DVRs are okay. While the NFL prohibits rebroadcasting of its games, churches can use a DVR, a digital video recorder, to watch the game from the beginning in its entirety if Sunday evening services run past kickoff time.
That's cool.
Yeah, so they make allowances for that.
So we could have Sunday service. We're just choosing not to.
Right.
All right.
A 2017 Lifeway research study found that 3 in 5 churches that have Sunday night activities will continue as normal despite the Super Bowl. So this allowance is a very nice gesture.
Yeah. Good idea. Super Bowl committee or whatever. NFL, I guess it would be.
Yeah. There are a lot more Super Bowl regulations and church-related copyright laws, but these are the big ones that churches tend to either break or not know if they're allowed to do. So you can find more about this, again, at factsandtrends.net, the article, 4 Guidelines to Keep Your Church Super Bowl Party from Being Illegal by Aaron Earls. It was posted just a few days ago. That would be a good refresher for your church. Send it to your pastor or your party planning committee.
We should definitely have one of those. The shirts.
And make sure y'all are all in line, because as Hillary said, Jesus likes it when we obey the laws.
He does. He literally put it in the Bible, so you should probably follow that.
We usually like to take a larger look at a larger topic, and while it's often super serious, this one is a little more lighthearted in the fact that it's about TV shows. Well, but it's also going to really hurt.
Yeah, it is.
To go through this.
Spoiler alert: if you're currently watching any of these TV shows,
yeah, it's going to be a blanket spoiler alert. We will announce what show we're talking about in each little segment here. But if you're watching that and you don't want to see it, just quickly turn us off for a little bit, and then you can turn the show back on.
Yeah.
5 minutes later.
Good idea.
Should be fine.
Should be. No promises.
But what we're going through is actually a list that comes from BuzzFeed, and I actually have 2 lists in front of me that are similar in nature, because that's what BuzzFeed does. It just recycles content.
Yeah. We're calling you out, BuzzFeed.
But are there TV scenes that are absolutely heartbreaking from start to finish, or episodes of TV to watch? No, I'm sorry. The saddest episodes of television that have ever aired, stuff like that. So,
This is stuff
from shows that we've all loved. Well, some of them I've never seen. But moments that have just killed us.
Oh, yeah.
Killed us on TV shows. We're going to go through this list. I've already been through them, and I know I haven't seen a lot of these, but I have seen plenty of scenes, so we'll talk about a few more after we go through the lists. But let's see. Hillary has seen a lot more of these than I have.
Probably, because I'm better than you are.
Because you have a lot more free time to just sit and veg.
That's not true. I used to have a lot more free time.
You binge watch while you're working at the school.
Actually, I'm not able to do that because they blocked Hulu.
Oh, because of you, I bet.
Probably. Jerks. I go to watch another episode of Golden Girls and it's like, can't connect. Check your server. Like, well, I can't.
All right, so the first one on the list is from Jane the Virgin.
I've never seen it.
Okay, good. It's when Jane learned that Michael had died. So I don't know any of these people. Let's see.
Well, but somebody died, and that's sad.
Yeah, that is, so that's, that is some character died. Yeah. Okay, so this one I have seen. This one did hurt. How I Met Your Mother. When Lily told Marshall that his dad had a heart attack and died.
Because they didn't tell him. They didn't tell, what's the actor's name?
They didn't tell Jason the guy Siegel. Who played Marshall?
They did not. They gave him a wrong script. So when she came up crying and said that, that is his legit reaction. And it's, because he's, what does he say? Like, I can't do this.
I'm not ready.
Oh. If anybody's ever lost anybody, you know that, like, you're not ready when they go. You're just not.
Well, I mean, when you first watch that episode, it might not be apparently, or it might be not super apparent, but they're doing a countdown through the whole episode.
The entire episode.
You keep seeing numbers, mm-hmm. and then it gets to that, a cab pulls up and has the number 1
of
the cab. And so you just know something is about to happen, and you...
Oh,
it's just that dread, that dreadful moment.
And because his dad was a great character.
Mm-hmm.
He really was. Mm-hmm. He was fun to watch.
Yeah, he was real good.
Heartbreaking.
So that was hard. That one hurt. Let's see here. Grey's Anatomy.
Okay.
When Lexi died during the plane crash.
Okay, so this was like a 2-episode long event. And if you watch Grey's Anatomy, number one, good on you. Number two.
It's been on forever, though.
It has. I'm not currently caught up, but whatever. So her and Mark Sloan had this like on-again, off-again thing. So she's like pinned underneath like half of this airplane. So you know she's not getting out.
Right.
And so Mark's there and he's trying to be comforting and he's like, you know, it's always been you. I love you. We were meant to be. And the last thing she says is, we're meant to be. And then she dies. And it's just so heartbreaking because like you keep wanting them to get together and then he finally admits that he really loves her.
I love you. I've always been in love with you. I will always be in love with you, which is why you have to stay alive. We're going to get married and you're going to make an amazing surgeon and we're going to have 2 or 3 kids. We're going to be happy, Lex, you and me. We're going to have the best life, Lexi, you and me. We're going to be so happy. You can't die, okay? You can't die because we're supposed to end up together. We're meant to be.
And then she says meant to be, and then she dies.
Dead.
But then...
Just rip your heart out.
A few episodes later, like, he's in a coma. Mm-hmm. He wakes up, and he's like, no, I'm totally fine, but it's this weird freak medical thing where people wake up from comas,
mm-hmm.
and they're good for, like, 12 hours, and then they just die.
Mm-hmm.
And then he died.
Oh, gosh.
So, they were meant to be together in heaven or something. I don't know, but... It was just so heartbreaking. That entire episode, like, just got you.
The next one, and this one I didn't see. I never watched this show, but I went and watched this scene. Okay. And so I had no emotional connection to these characters at all.
And yet?
And it was still getting me.
Okay.
Okay? I don't know the story. I don't know what led up to it.
Can you just tell me what it is?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
When she walks in and
finds her mom just lying dead on the couch. And she comes, and she appears to be an adult at this point.
Yeah, she is.
And so she's just walking in like normal in the house, asking a question, do I need to go pick up somebody from school?
Yeah.
I guess her little sister or something. And finds her, says, Mom? Mommy?
Oh!
Then freaks out.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one hurt. My gosh. Again, no emotional connection to these characters whatsoever, but just that scene was enough. They did it really well.
She did.
Sons of Anarchy. Did you watch that one?
No.
Yeah, I didn't watch that either.
Fans of the show were like, wait, what was it? What part? I watched that show. Well, it's not a nice scene either.
One Tree Hill. Did you watch One Tree Hill?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so when Jamie put Quentin's cape on his coffin, and when Skills mourned at the basketball court.
Yes. Did you watch One Tree Hill?
No, who's Quentin?
Quentin. So he was a regular starting like season 2 or 3 or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe. No, you know what? He was in the first season. But anyway, he started getting more involved in the storyline as the seasons progressed. But just a solid individual. Just the kind of person that you wanted to be your friend because he always had your back. So when Lucas, the little kid, Jamie was born, like he was like, I'm going to be your person. Like we're going to hang out. It's going to be great. So he was a really good influence on this child and, you know, told him like kids are going to make fun of you. Let them, like, it doesn't matter. You know who you are. So that, oh geez.
She's having a hard time, folks.
So it was just really heartbreaking because, like, that cape meant a lot to both of them.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to wear a cape to school. Jamie wanted to wear a cape to school. Mm. So for him to, like, give up that cape and put it on his... Oh, geez. Oh, crap. No, I'm thinking of the wrong person. Did you say Quentin died?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm thinking the wrong person. He was in the later episodes, like the later seasons. But he was a good, he was a kid. Okay. Rewind.
Did you just come up with something?
No,
fake?
I was thinking of something else. I was thinking of a different show.
You were mixing two different scenarios.
But now I totally remember. Quentin. So back up. Got this. Okay.
You were almost crying, and you weren't even remembering the right thing.
Shut up. Once your heel just gets you. Anyway, so Haley is Jamie's mom, and Haley was Quentin's English teacher. And this kid was like, I'm just going to go play basketball. I'm going to be in the NBA. There's nothing. I don't need to learn English. So Haley really tried to, like, take him under her wing and, like, surround him by good people. And he was really trying to get his life together to be a better person when he got shot. That's what it was.
Okay.
I totally remember now.
All right. Next one. This is one that I know of. When Will cried in Uncle Phil's arms on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh.
Wondering why his dad didn't want him. That scene was so... Like, I saw that first time. I was a real little kid.
Yeah.
And this was, like, the first, like, sad scene I remember as a child. Where he just goes off, you know, angry about everything he's going to do. And he doesn't need his dad. I'm going to have a wife and I'm going to have kids. And there's nothing he can teach me about being a father.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of stops. And he's, like, huffing and puffing. And then just, how come he don't want me, man?
Oh.
And just hugs him. Oh!
That,
golly.
Did you know that that wasn't scripted?
Yes, I did know that. Yeah.
So, like, because Will Smith apparently had the same relationship with his own father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was so inspired by that.
It was really, like, I guess he just connected with that his character in that moment. Mm-hmm. It was like,
yeah.
And it gets you.
Mm-hmm.
Gets you.
Okay, now this one's an iconic one. I didn't ever see it personally, and I think it might have happened before I was born. I don't remember. I don't know. The show's been on for so long. Sesame Street. When Mr. Hooper died. And
yes.
The neighbors had to explain what that meant to Big Bird.
To Big Bird. Because he didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't actually watch it. When I was looking at this list, I was like, oh, that's stinking sad.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Forever? Or never?
Big Bird, when people die, they don't come back. Ever?
Oh, like it's a puppet, and I'm getting all the feels in my heart.
So a more recent one, and this is a show that you and I both watch, The Good Place.
I don't watch The Good Place.
You don't watch The Good Place?
No,
it's just John.
Yep.
Oh,
I tried to, but it was just too stupid.
No,
they kept saying fork, brilliant. And I just
it's brilliant.
Can't
it is couldn't. Absolutely brilliant. Okay, anyway. Well, anyway, they were. You know, Eleanor and Chidi. Do you know the characters at least?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah. Eleanor and Chidi, basically the two main characters. You know, they go through the reset after reset after reset of The Good Place. And so they've lived several lifetimes in this place. And each time they've fallen in love somehow or gotten closer somehow or helped themselves somehow. Oh,
that's sweet.
And then they get, like, to this last thing. They have a chance to save whatever, it's hard to explain it to someone who hasn't seen it. save this reset, this timeline. And the only way to do that is to have Eleanor be in charge and put Chidi back in the simulation. And to do that, they have to erase Chidi's memory. And they have just finally gotten back together in the main storyline that we're seeing.
They were meant to be.
And so they're sitting and watching on this giant screen all the moments, all the times they've fallen in love, that most of which they don't remember. They're watching them on the screen.
Oh, no.
And just reliving this, and then they have to just...
They have to say goodbye.
Have to say goodbye.
Oh, man. That would suck so hard.
It was really bad.
That would be terrible.
But it's ended well so far. So.
Well, that's good.
They're back now.
Okay.
Let's see.
So happy.
There's only one episode left of that, too. That comes out this week, and I just don't know. I don't know what to expect. I don't know what they're going to do.
John's told me, like, what they do.
Yeah.
And what they've done. And the thing that they've added to The Good Place.
Mm-hmm.
The door.
Yeah.
So I know some things.
Yeah, it's strange.
But, huh.
All right. On Friends.
Nope, I didn't watch Friends.
You didn't watch Friends?
No, it seems so stupid.
It is. I don't even have the time to tell you how wrong you are. Actually, it's going to bug me if I do.
Actually, I'm sorry. You're wrong.
No, on Friends, when Rachel found out that Ross had cheated on her, it was a really big moment. Basically, she says, I used to think of you as somebody who would never, ever hurt me, ever. And now I can't stop picturing you with her. I can't. It doesn't matter what you say or what you do. It's just changed everything forever. You know, and this is the couple that you're waiting to get together. The will they, won't they couple
which
for the whole
which
show.
Which two are they?
Ross, the... he's
the tall guy?
The nerdy goof.
Is he the tall guy?
Yeah. I mean, not the nerdy... Not the goof. He's the nerdy nerd. I mean, he's the...
He's the taller one.
He's the dweeb. He's the museum guy, the archaeologist or whatever
he is. Is he the taller one?
They're all kind of tall except for Joey. I don't know what to tell you. And then Rachel, which is...
Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone knows that. One.
Okay. Wyatt Earp. Did you watch Wyatt Earp? Winona Earp. I'm sorry. Winona Earp.
I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on here. Okay. Futurama. You already told me you didn't watch this one.
No, but you told me about it, and that's completely heartbreaking.
Yeah. So Fry... So I went back and I watched the scene just to make sure I was remembering it correctly. So let me... there was a few more details to it. But essentially, it found... Found like the remains of his dog. He's trying to bring his dog back. His dog's name is Seymour. And they had found out... what it was a long, stupid, complicated show to get to this point. But, you know, they had found a way they could clone the dog and bring him back. And then Fry stopped it and said, I had Seymour for 3 years. But he went on to live many years after that. And he had another family, and he had other friends and a whole life after me. And I shouldn't desecrate that, essentially.
Right.
And so they don't clone the dog. The dog doesn't come back. Well, then they flash back to the dog sitting outside of the place where Fry works for the rest of his life.
Oh, geez.
Waiting for Fry to come back. So he didn't have anybody else. That dog just sat there and waited as everything around him started to get decrepit and aged and all that. And he's getting old. And then eventually he just puts his head down on the,
no.
the pavement and dies. Oh.
I don't know if you've ever had to, but putting a dog that you've had to sleep is literally the most heartbreaking thing.
Awful. Yeah.
I had my dog for 15 years. And... 30 some odd days, and it was just the right thing to do. And I, oh my gosh, it was the worst thing ever.
Yep.
The worst thing ever. So just the, oh my gosh, pets get you a lot worse than humans do, I guess. Anyway.
All right. Glee. You watched this one. I never watched this one, but this one had a real life tie because the actual, actor died.
Yeah.
Mr. Schuster wept while holding Finn's Letterman jacket.
So, oh, geez. I got a box of tissues here in case I need them. but I can vividly remember I was sitting on the couch. I had just finished the fourth season of Glee on Netflix, and the fifth season hadn't been released to Netflix yet. So I went to Hastings. And I bought the fifth season.
Oh, my gosh.
I had to know. So the season, the episode is called The Quarterback, and everyone is just mourning because he's died. And before that episode, The Quarterback, Finn like breaks into this room and punches a guy and tells him to get off of Rachel, and he's like, get off my wife and all this stuff. Like, they were going to get married. Like, they were meant to be. So everyone's freaking out. But the only reason that Finn was in Glee is because Mr. Schuster, like, blackmailed him, pretty much. He heard him singing in the locker room and was like,
that story point. Yeah.
Either you join Glee or I tell your coach that I found weed in your locker, which wasn't true. But he was able to, you know, show Finn how to be a man because he didn't have a father in his life because his dad had died. And so to Mr. Schuster, that was his son. And, oh, geez. He's just like holding this Leatherman's jacket, just crying into his wife's arms.
Yeah.
It was just heartbreaking.
So next one is Lost.
I didn't watch
it. You didn't watch it?
I watched the first season, but I was in like the sixth grade when it came out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a little older than you.
A lot older. What are you, like 45, Matt?
I am 34. Thank you.
Well, I'm dyslexic, so I was close.
On Lost, when Charlie sacrificed himself to save everyone. I watched the whole show, but only one time. You know, it's not like been a repeat show.
Yeah, yeah.
For me. So I don't actually remember this. I don't even remember Charlie. I probably should have watched this one.
It's Dominic Monaghan. It was his first role-ish thing, like right after The Lord of the Rings.
Hmm. Okay.
So.
Yeah. Anyway, Dawson's Creek. Did you watch Dawson's Creek?
I did not.
No, we'll skip that one then.
Okay.
No. All these shows we don't watch. Friday Night Lights, did you watch that?
No, John did, though.
Yeah, John can take that show and shove it off to the side.
Off to, there you go. Matthew, that's not very Christian.
All right, Doctor Who. There's a lot in Doctor Who. I'm a big Doctor Who fan. There's a lot of scenes like this because essentially either he dies
to regenerate, being the doctor.
Yeah, or his companion either dies or for some reason or another has to stop being his companion, and it's usually a tragic reason. So, like every season.
Okay.
So there's something big and emotional at the end of almost every season.
Gotcha.
But the first one, the first real heartbreaking one, came at the end of season two when, to save the world, they had to open this portal to a different dimension or whatever, and Rose, his companion, who they were in love, like this was a romantic storyline, got sucked through, and then the door closed.
And you can't open it.
So they're both, yeah, they're both standing on the same side of a wall, separated by two different universes, just with their ears up against it and their hands up against it, just knowing they're separated forever. And so, yeah, they... cuts to a couple years or several months later at least, and they get like a message like coming through, like the doctor sends a message to her in a dream and tells her coordinates of where to go, and she drove all out there, and he kind of shows up as this hologram thing saying, you know, he's using the energy from a dying supernova to send this message, but once it burns up, that's going to be it, kind of thing. And so they're sitting there, and the heartbreaking moment comes. And I don't even think they list it here in the thing. But the heartbreaking moment comes because they'd never really gotten together. They'd never really 100% solidified that they love each other.
Right.
Okay. Because the doctor's like that, because he's been alive for hundreds of years.
Okay.
And so in those last few seconds, she says... that she loves him, you know, crying, sobbing, ugly crying too. They didn't even make it look pretty, just like genuine crying.
Right.
And he says, well, if it's my last chance to say it, Rose Tyler, and then he cuts out and it's
gone. Oh man.
And she collapses onto the ground.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He does too. And it is, oh, it hurt. It hurt me. Still hurts me deep. Oh, I find it's the love-based ones that hurt me more than the death-based ones.
I don't know. I think it just depends on how invested I am.
We got Arrow, where Tommy was crushed under a building and Oliver couldn't save him.
I didn't.
He's yelling, Tommy, it should have been me. Open your eyes, Tommy. Open your eyes. I remember that. I don't remember how I felt when I first saw it.
I didn't watch that part.
MASH. Okay. This one was when it was revealed that Lieutenant Colonel Henry Blake's plane was shot down and no one survived. He was going home and it got shot down.
Dang.
And so that's how the episode ended. The episode ended just fine. He's going home and he left and it was a big send off. And then there was 2 minutes left in the show. And just radar comes in saying, I have a message, Lieutenant Colonel Henry Blake's plane was shot down over the Sea of Japan. It spun in. There were no survivors. And so it was just this out of nowhere, out of left field thing, and that's the way it ended. And you come to find out the writers actually did it out of spite because dude quit the show. They didn't want him to quit the show. His story wasn't going to be over.
And he wanted to be done. But then it was.
And that brought this whole list of things of that happens a lot.
Oh, it does.
That the writers get mad that a character decides they don't want to be on the show anymore. And so they always kill them off. It's never a nice thing.
Yep. That happened in Grey's Anatomy to literally my favorite character. We'll get to that in a moment.
It did. I remember that. All right. There's a lot of violent ones on here, like on The Walking Dead.
Oh, that one. I don't even want to talk about that. Well, let me. That one was heartbreaking. It was. I won't talk about the act, but so Negan, bad guy.
He's the one that has the bat wrapped in barbed wire.
Barbed wire.
Okay, that guy.
Her name is Lucille. Anyway,
the bat is
the bat. Yeah. It's sad because you know that Glenn, the guy, the victim, mm-hmm. the guy that died, did it to save his, not necessarily his wife, but his wife. They had just found out she was pregnant, and Negan was like, I'm going to kill two of you, so, you know, pick which one type of thing. And he, you know, was like, it's not going to be my wife. It's not going to be my kid. It's not going to be my wife. He doesn't say that, but you just get that feeling that that's exactly why he did it. And after he gets hit, and then after he gets hit, he says, Maggie, I will always find you. Oh, right in the feels, because the entire time he's just trying to reassure her that he loves her.
Yeah.
Whilst he's dying, and it's just really sad.
Wow. More recent one, this happened last season, the end of Superstore's last season.
I haven't seen it. Deidre's mad at me for not seeing
it. Yeah, oh yeah, Deidre is determined to get you to like it. Where they have a character on there, and this is a comedy, you know, they don't do super emotional stuff too often. But this is how it ended, and it seemed off tone, but it was also very emotional. And that the character Mateo, he finds out really early on in the show, he finds out that his parents brought him over to America and they were illegal aliens and he was technically an illegal alien too.
Oh, dang.
That he was an undocumented worker. And when he first got hired, there was some glitch in the system or whatever that got him through that they didn't have like that background check thing for illegal aliens. Yeah, I don't remember what it's called now.
Got it.
But then several points throughout the next couple seasons, there's a lot of near misses with that. And then the company does this thing where they have to put everybody through this background check, even if you've been working there. And his boss, Glenn, you know, figures it out. And
his boss a jerk?
No. He figures it out. And at the end of the episode, he said, so I ran your name through the check again, and everything's good. You know, everything came back fine. And, you know, the just kind of a knowingly, I got your back kind of thing. And
yeah. Oh, so he was trying to like.
Yeah, they breathed in. Okay. Yeah. And, but yeah, then it was like the store was starting up this thing of unionizing idea.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so as kind of like a punishment or a deterrent or whatever, they ran everybody's name through and found out that he was. And so they sent people, and they didn't find out that they were coming to check the store for him until they were literally upon the store.
Oh, dang.
And so it's like several minutes of them, like everybody's trying to sneak him out, hide him, get him out of the building.
Oh, like a team effort.
And then they all just get cornered, centered, and everybody's panicking, and he just says, guys, it's over. And then it just cuts to him in the back of like a big police van thing behind the little gated shield. It was awful. And everybody's just watching him as they drive him away. It was really bad.
That sounds terrible.
It was really bad, yeah. It hurt.
Something like that happened in Golden Girls.
Yeah?
Yeah. Where Dorothy had a student that she was trying to mentor on like writing styles and stuff because he was a really talented writer. Well, she submits his paperwork to the newspaper because it was really good, like it was a poem or something. And it turns out that immigration had been looking for this particular student because he was an illegal immigrant.
Mm.
And the episode ends with like INS or whoever coming to Dorothy's house and saying like, we know he's here, and she's trying to protect him.
Mm.
But she can't, and he comes out of the kitchen. He's like, it's okay. And she hugs him, and she says, you will always be my favorite student. And then he just walks off with them.
Mm.
And you never know what happens. And do you know who that student was? Mario Lopez.
Really?
Yeah. But it was a good episode. Like, it was sad, because she never meant for that to happen.
Yeah.
But, oh, man.
Wow.
Heartbreaking.
Okay, we are running low on time, so
let's go fast.
Let's just do our last two shows that we want to focus on.
Okay.
So we'll do yours first, which is Golden Girls, right?
There's a Golden Girls, and then there's 8 Simple Rules.
Okay.
I want to talk about.
Let's do those two real quick.
Okay. So in Golden Girls, there's an episode where they're talking about birthdays, and they do several like flashback episodes, which are fun. And Rose, which is Betty White, is talking about the first birthday she had after her husband Charlie had passed away. So the scene starts, she's fixing a cake and putting it on the kitchen table, and then she walks out of the room. Then she opens the door and goes, a cake for me, it's my birthday, you remembered. So she sits down at this table and starts having a conversation with her dead husband. And she's saying that, you know, I've decided that since it's my birthday, you can't get mad at me. But I'm going to sell the house and I'm going to move. I can't move on. There's just too many memories here. I heard Miami is really nice. And she's just talking all about how, you know, she can't move on without him in that house. And she says, I know, Rose, shut up and eat your cake. So she goes, well, you know, it's my birthday, so I get the rose. And she cuts this giant piece of cake and starts eating it. But it's just, it's so heartbreaking.
And Rose is Betty White, right?
Rose is Betty White. I already said that. Thanks for
listening. I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
Yeah. because she is really like the ditzy one. She's not normally super serious.
Right.
But she's having this whole conversation with her dead husband. Like, don't be mad at me. I still love you. And trying to continue those traditions even though he's gone. It was, just got you right in the heart. I remember watching that show with John, or that episode with John, and he goes, dang it, Betty White! Why would you do this to me? That's good writing, man. It's just heartbreaking.
All right, what's the other one? 8 Simple Rules?
8 Simple Rules.
And they used to be called 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter, right? That was the original title.
Yeah, but it was shortened to 8 Simple Rules. So it was John Ritter and the wife from Married with Children. I don't remember her name.
Okay.
Anyway, so, you know, John Ritter was this magazine or a newspaper writer for sports or something. Anyway, John Ritter.
For sports.
like, he's a sports writer. Whatever, I don't know these things. But one episode, he's totally fine, making plans, all this stuff. And then the next episode, he's dead. Because John Ritter actually died in real life. So this is normally a comedy show. It's a sitcom. And, you know, the entire episode, you've got these characters that are just weeping and crying because, you know, their TV dad is dead. But you know that the actors are actually crying because their friend has passed away. And it just, the entire episode is just a tear fest. At the very end, they're all laying in their parents' bed. So it's the mom and then the three kids. They're just laying there looking at pictures and they're just crying. And they're like, I miss him. And he's just gone. Like, it's not anything that they could ever, you know, they can't bring him back.
Right.
And it's just heartbreaking because you know that the show's never going to be the same again. Because John Ritter was just hysterical.
And that's a strange thing that happens, especially when the show has to continue. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember when that happened with News Radio. Did you ever watch News Radio with Phil Hartman and Andy Dick and Dave Foley?
Nope.
Well, that was, Phil Hartman was essentially the, he wasn't the main character, but he was the funniest character on the show. And he was one of the constants. And after four seasons of a really funny show, he died. That was when he got killed over the summer after the, you know, that break. And so their first episode back for the fifth, which turned out to be the last season because they couldn't keep it together without Phil Hartman. He was like the glue of the show. That first episode back was just all about that. He had passed away. And they were trying to be funny in it as well. But also knowing, gosh, this is just a heartbreaking thing. What do we do? You know? But, yeah. You should watch that show. I bet you would really love News Radio. It's a really good show.
I'll think about it.
My two things. We'll do the last one on this list, which was Boy Meets World. The last episode when Mr. Feeney said goodbye to everyone.
Oh. Yeah.
Love you all. Class dismissed. Ouch.
Oh, man.
It was a good hurt, you know. At least it was a...
They did well by him.
Yeah.
They really did.
Yeah.
But good night and goodbye. It's, but that entire last scene, because he's telling them like...
This is like a big impassioned speech, right? To everybody sitting in
there. And he says, do good. And Sean says, don't you mean do well? And he says, no, I mean do good. Like, you're breaking the laws of grammar for these kids. Oh, my gosh.
That's good. The last show we'll talk about is one that, this is one of the things early on that your husband John and I connected over, and that is Scrubs.
Scrubs.
And how stupid, ridiculous that show is.
So great.
And yet, when it wants to be heartbreaking, it is devastating.
And it does it so well.
So subtly. Like it comes out of nowhere and it still hits you like a ton of bricks. And so there were three actual things that I remember on this. I mean, there are several scenes that are really sad. But the top three in my mind are as follows.
Okay. In this order or no particular
order? In this
order. Okay.
Counting down.
Counting. Okay.
3, 2, 1.
3, 2, okay.
Number three was when Laverne died, which is what you brought up. Laverne being the
passionate black lady.
One sassy black lady, as Creed would say on The Office.
Yeah.
But she was the religious one, but also, you know, gossipy and goofy and
that's in the get it your own dang self drawer.
But but in this, leading up to this, had been like a two-parter episode.
It was,
about
everything happens faith, for a reason.
You know, about how God's in control of things and all that. And then we find out at the very end. She's
in a car accident.
She was in a car accident.
And in a coma.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And then she dies.
I think the saddest part of that episode was when Carla refused to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Because they were best friends. Mm-hmm. And Carla's like, if I don't say goodbye, she can't leave.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to cry.
All right. Number two. Let's move on before you cry. Number two was the episode where they had a patient, and this was a patient that had been in several times over the show.
The old lady?
No, not the old lady.
Okay.
It was the girl from Mad TV.
Oh.
Who died.
Crazy lady.
And so that was sad in and of itself.
It was.
But they used her organs to save a bunch of other people who were waiting. It was like five different people, I think, who were waiting on organs, including one who needed a kidney but wasn't in a rush to get a kidney.
Yeah.
And then they found out she had drugs in her system or something. What
rabies.
Was it? Rabies, that's what it was.
Rabies.
She had rabies.
So they're trying like crazy to save all these people.
Yeah, and they're just dying one after another. And the first four died. And Dr. Cox is just having a meltdown over it. And JD says, look, all of these people, it was going to be a miracle if they had gotten an organ anyway. You know, they were most likely going to die. And then that last one, the kidney patient, who he'd already been
befriending
and stuff. Passed away. And after that, and the fight, and he throws the paddles and everything. And he goes back to JD and says, he wasn't about to die, was he? He could have waited a few more months for a kidney. And then he just left.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was just, oh, gosh.
I'm not crying, you're crying.
It was awful. And so that leads us up to the number one. which was...
Where do you think we are right now?
Yeah, where do you think we are right now? This whole episode of him imagining...
Him being his, Dr. Cox.
Yeah, Dr. Cox imagining his ex-brother-in-law, technically, and then...
We later find it, later
brother-in-law, who's played by Brendan Fraser, who had been on the show a couple times already.
Yeah.
And it was clear, it was clearly established they were pretty much best buddies. They were really close. And he died. But he died early in the episode.
But we don't realize it.
You don't know it. You don't realize nobody else is interacting with him except for Dr. Cox in this episode.
Yep.
And this whole episode, or and leading up to that, they were talking about they were going to have a party for his son.
His son's birthday party, yeah.
Yeah, his birthday party in the park, and they wanted it to be nice, and so they were going to dress up and stuff like that. And so they're all walking to what you think is the birthday party. And he's Dr. Cox says, JD, well, are you ready to see my kid with cake all over his face and you know, stuff like that? And JD just stares at him, where do you think we are right now? And then you realize they're at his funeral. The guy's funeral, and the music, the acting is really good.
Yes.
They also did a phenomenal job choosing the music for this stuff.
Yeah.
Because that is what really drew you in emotionally to those scenes. Like the scene where everybody was dying in the hospital.
How to save
that
a
was
life.
How to Save a Life, yeah. Which was perfect. It was heartbreaking.
It was.
Scrubs is mean.
Every once in a while, when I want to tick John off, I'll say, where do you think we are right now? And he'll go, shut up!
You stop that! You stop it right now!
Not funny! I thought it was funny.
Okay.
There are so many more, though. I mean, really, I could talk about these all day long.
Yeah, there's a lot. And we're over time.
No, we're not. This is your show, Matt. Do what you want.
We're still bound by a few laws of time and space. It is Wednesday, and that means we're going to play a game, and I'm going to actually, we're not going to go head-to-head. I'm going to challenge you.
I'm going to lose.
In a game called What is Real?
I don't watch Christian movies.
Christian movies. Well, this is going to be even more fun then.
They're so dumb.
So what I've got is I've got 5 movie descriptions.
Oh, Lord.
Okay? Like what you'd find on the back cover.
Yeah.
Some of them are real. Some of them are bogus. You need to pick which one's real and which one's not.
Okay? I don't want to do this. Can I plead the 5th?
No.
Okay.
First one, Tribulation. Here's the synopsis. Police detective Tom Canboro, who must take on a mysterious group of criminals with frightening psychic powers, awakens from a coma to discover the world has undergone a frightening change where the very souls of mankind hang in the balance. Starring Gary Busey and Howie Mandel.
I'm going to go with that is not real.
That is 100% real.
Shut your mouth! Are you kidding me?
It's a real movie. It was in the 90s. Go watch it and just cry.
Is Velocipastor real? Because I keep seeing...
Velocipastor is a real movie, yes.
Oh.
But it's not a Christian movie.
Darn.
Per se. All right, next one. It's called Harvest. In the wake of a mass vanishing across the globe, the small farming community of Pleasant Lake, Texas, becomes a refuge for the hungry and the lost. But when the One World government comes to seize control of all the farmland in the area, it is up to Big John Kavanaugh to protect his farm and his community. But he doesn't yet realize that the only protection he needs is from God. Starring Kevin Sorbo and Stacy Keach.
I don't know who Stacy Keach is.
He's, you'd recognize him.
It's a he? Okay.
He's a dude. Old dude.
I don't...
Harvest, real or not real?
Both.
Come on.
Real, not
no,
real.
No, it's not real.
I knew the second I said it, it wasn't real.
All right, next one. Deceived.
Oh, You're going to deceive me, aren't you, jerk?
In a remote space observatory perched high in the Sierra Nevada mountains.
Fake.
A needle frantically scratches erratic lines on a strip chart recorder confirming extraterrestrial life.
Nope.
But is this message really what it appears to be, or sinister forces at work? Starring Judd Nelson and Lou Gossett Jr.
No.
This is a real movie. So far, you are 0 for 3.
Well, we got Matt, 2 left. When I fail, I like to fail fully. So,
well, we got
do left. Everything 100%, I always say.
Let's see if you can get a clean sweep.
Probably.
Waterproof. In this dramatic journey of restoration and salvation, we witness the harsh realities in both the rough streets of Washington, D.C. and the sleepy rural town of Waterproof, Louisiana. Single mother Tyree Battle struggles to keep her young son away from gang-plagued streets, and after her son accidentally shoots a lonely widow Jewish shopkeeper, she takes him on the run to her hometown of Waterproof, starring Burt Reynolds and Orlando Jones. Waterproof, real or fake?
God, I hope it's real.
It is real.
Yes! I'm going to go watch it. Oh, man. Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds and Orlando Jones. All right, last one. Judgment. It is the imminent future. The world follows one government and one man.
Isn't the future always imminent?
It is the world of peace. Yet still some fight the authorities. To crush the dissent, Earth's ruler arranges a trial of unprecedented proportion. When a champion of the Christian resistance is put on trial to be executed,
her
defense attorney suddenly faces the biggest trial in history, with the guilt or innocence of God himself hanging in the balance. Starring Mr. T and Corbin Burnson.
I'm going to go fake because it sounds like Star Wars.
It's real.
Oh my gosh. I got one right.
I believe all of these are from the 90s. Way back when these movies were far worse than what they are now. I mean, they're still bad now, but far worse than. And so if you're thinking like we're thinking that you could write a better Christian movie, well,
you probably can.
You got some attitude, mister. But now's your chance. We are coming out with a game called Church Flicks. It's a card game. It's a party game. It's going to be coming out next month. We're excited about it, and it plays like Cards Against Humanity, except it's, you know, it's clean, it's family friendly. But you take scripts, unfinished scenes, and they have one line, and then you're playing your best line, your funniest line to finish it. We explain it a little bit better on our website. Go to backrowradio.com/churchflicks. You'll find our Facebook page with updates. We're excited about it. We hope you will be too. From the Morning Side Hug and Backrow Radio. And one of the things that Backrow Radio was started for was back when Mo and I were doing a podcast called Backrow Baptist Podcast, we had made it a focus to share independent Christian music. So we would always have a break in every single episode. We would have a break with a song that most people had not heard, most Christians had not heard, and we wanted to spread that music out. And as the show went on to its third year, we had amassed quite a big collection of independent Christian music and artists, and we had the idea, what if we could make a radio station that had a heavy focus on independent Christian music?
So that was one of our big draws, and it still remains one of our big pushes. And so you'll see that with tonight. Every Tuesday night, we have an Indie Music Tuesday show from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where it's nothing but independent Christian artists. We play them in the same rotation as the mainstream artists, and there's just a lot of good music out there that practically nobody is hearing. And one of those bands, one of those artists is Cypress and Co., which I even said it there. It's kind of a misnomer because it's not a band per se. I mean, there is a band, but this is an artist. And her name is Rochelle. She is joining me this morning, and we have a game of 20 questions I'm playing with her, essentially. I've got 20 interview questions. There's not going to be, you know, follow-ups. There's not going to be anything like that. Just straight questions, straight answers from Rochelle, Cypress, and Co. So please welcome her, and we are going to dive into the first question, and that is, who is Rochelle?
Me. I'm Rochelle. And I go by Cypress a lot because that's my stage name. And to me, a cypress tree represents strength and flourishing in like super extreme environments.
So what is the meaning behind the name Cypress and Co. or Cypress and Company?
So I represent Cypress, like I said, and the company is a collection of everyone who supports my music. So like the fans, the graphic design artists, the sponsors, everyone. That is the company.
Okay. Can you share a bit about your faith journey thus far?
My faith journey. It has been such a journey. I grew up in church, always knew about God. My dad was a pastor, so I was like forced to learn Bible verses. And I always loved God. Until my junior year of college, in which I was like, kind of want to do things my own way, so I'm not going to care about you anymore, Lord. Bye. And totally walked away from him, and it was the worst decision I have ever made in my life. My depression and anxiety got 10 times worse than it was before. I started cutting and turning to unhealthy coping mechanisms, and it was the absolute worst. So after that, I was like, I actually need God, and He actually makes me a better person than I could ever possibly be without Him. So I was like, hey, Lord, will you have me back? And He was like, of course. And He showed me that He loved me even as I turned away from Him, and that He loves me and that He's with me even through my dark times and dark places. And even though loving Him back hasn't taken away the depression, it hasn't been like a cure-all for my anxiety, it's like assuring to know that He's with me through those dark times. And it gives me hope because I know that it's not about me and that I'm not just living for me, but that I'm living for His purpose for me. And so there's like some comfort in that, even though it still really sucks sometimes because depression is the worst.
Agreed. Thank you for that. How did you get started in music?
So when I was in the womb of my mother, my parents prayed that I would be musically inclined. And ever since then, I have been doing singing, playing piano, music things. I moved to Nashville in 2016. Started Cypress and Co. in 2018, and now here we are.
Who would you say are your musical influences?
I love 21 Pilots, like, more than you could know. 21 Pilots, NF, Switchfoot, Skillet, those bands, I feel, do a really great job of reaching the, like, Christian audience, but also a secular audience, but from like a place of faith. And I also really love Flyleaf, Icon for Hire. I like grew up on them. Recently, as in like last year, discovered Half Alive, which is a super dope band. And I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on Christian radio, but I also like Billie Eilish.
We'll give you a pass. So when sharing your EP with us at Back Row Radio, the SoundCloud playlist was tagged with mental health, depression, anxiety, and similar tags. Are these issues that you've dealt with personally? I know you've already touched on depression.
Yes, I have dealt with depression and anxiety off and on since I was 14, maybe 13, 13 or 14. And even though I often will just have days where I don't want to get out of bed and I don't want to do life anymore, I have found that those symptoms aren't what make or break a person, it's what you do with them. So learning to cope with that, even though I'm not perfect at it, and there are definitely days that I'm just like, yeah, I'm just gonna like take a nap. Sometimes you just need to take a nap. But I've learned and I'm striving to utilize healthy coping mechanisms, because it is something that I feel a lot of people deal with, and it's not an excuse for harming yourself or for not reaching your potential, but it's a challenge that we can overcome, and it's something that is just, we gotta get through it. And as I have learned to face it and deal with it, I have found that it has also empowered me to help others deal with it and face it. I actually worked in psych rehab for 9 months at one point and saw the absolute like worst case scenario, like brain chemicals not working properly, mental health issues. But like got to work with those people and help them learn, how can I manage this? How can I deal with it? So yes, depression and anxiety is a real, real, real thing in my life. And it's what inspires a lot of my music. But as I write music, that helps me cope with it and it helps me get through it. So not only do I write music for my fans and for the people listening, but I also write it for me, because that's how I process things. And it's healthy.
Well, let's take a break from the serious questions and do a few rapid-fire faves. So for the next 5 questions here, we're going to do one right after the other. What's your favorite meal, movie, band, TV show, and song? Go.
Favorite meal, dinner at 10:30 p.m. Favorite movie, hasn't come out yet. Favorite band is this hair band right here, because it hasn't broken on me yet. Favorite TV show? Well, I have never been to a TV show, but I have been to Best Buy, and I think that counts. Favorite song was a song by Toby Mac featuring Jamie Grace, and yeah, it's pretty good.
Gracious. Okay, in your song Through Hell, which was, I believe, your first single from the CP, can you expound and just what you mean by the lyrics, to get to you, I've got to go through hell to find your light, I've got to be familiar with the dark?
So, Through Hell is a reflection of my personal journey. And even though I don't think that it's necessary for everyone in the world to experience hardship or really difficult things in order to know God, I don't think that's the case. But I do think that as we experience those things, it can help us know God in a deeper way, that we would have never been able to know Him in that way had we not gone through those hardships. And so it's this kind of learning to trust Him in those difficult times brings you to like a new place of faith and to learning new things about who God is. And for me, that journey has also brought me to learning about myself and learning my own purpose in life, which I feel is to create music. So even though I hope that not everyone will have to go through hell to get to where they're supposed to be, I want to encourage everyone who has experienced that, that maybe this tough time, maybe this hard circumstance, is actually a huge part in your story in the world and your purpose in life. and maybe it's going to inspire someone else someday to not give up.
That's fantastic. On your EP, which song is the most meaningful to you and why?
In the Dark is the most meaningful for sure. I wrote it for my older sister, Adrian, who I love a lot. And when I was growing up, we didn't get along. She always picked on me and I annoyed her and it was just like the worst. But as we get older, we realized that we're sisters and we need each other. And I saw her struggling through a dark time and I really wanted to just express to her that you don't have to be happy and you don't have to be full of energy and like super fun for me to want to be in your life, but that I want to be with you in the struggle and I want to be with you even when you feel really down. And so I wrote In the Dark for her to just be like, hey, it's okay if you're struggling. Let me be a part of this struggle with you. Let me sit with you here.
Okay, and on your EP, which song was the most fun for you?
Good Day is the most fun for me. It is such a hype song, and I just want to like jump around and dance really ridiculously every time I hear it. When we recorded it, we had like, I think 4 or 5 college kids in my friend's dorm room, and we like were all doing the together to make that like crowd vocal sound, and it was just a blast. And so I think about that whenever I hear it, and I think about just the joy that it brings and the joy that it brings me and the joy that it's gonna bring you when you listen to it, because it's a blast. Go listen to it.
I do enjoy that song. We've been playing that here on Backer Radio for a couple months now. How do you come up with your lyrics? I know the process can be different for everybody.
How do I come up with lyrics? That is such a tough question. Also, because I'm more of a melody person, I will hear a melody far before I even like have an idea for what I want to write about. But a lot of times the lyrics will kind of just like, this isn't a really technical answer, but they just kind of come. And it feels like I am just a conduit for the song to exist instead of creating the song from scratch. I feel like the song is like already floating around and then someday it just decides to like land on me and I just like put it out into the world. And that's just like real weird, but it's how I feel. Now there are other times where I'll be like really intentional and think, oh, how can I describe this situation as a metaphor for something and like use technical lyric rhyme schemes and stuff. But more often than that, I kind of just say what I'm feeling and try to make it rhyme sometimes. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And that's kind of, it just exists. It just happens. It's like a miracle every time. Which is also why co-writing is not my best thing, because it's not really super systematic the way I write. But that's besides the point.
If you could tour with any currently active Christian band, which would it be?
Skillet. They are so good. Not only is their music incredible, but their live performances are just straight fire. Literally fire. Like, there are actual flames. I remember my first Skillet concert, and there were flames, and it was freaking amazing. Are we allowed to say freaking?
Who else deserves a special mention for their work on this album or behind the scenes?
Special mention to Autumn Johnson, who, when I first moved to Nashville, befriended me and has been supporting me ever since. She does PR stuff and helps me with digital marketing and so much more. I can't even name the amount of work that she has put into this EP and has helped me bring my vision to life. So she's pretty dope. Autumn, thank you. Thank you for helping me and supporting me. You're awesome.
So when will this EP be released and where can we find it?
It will be released January 31st, 2020. It's the last day of the first month of the new decade, and you can find it on all the platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, other platforms that are escaping my brain right now. It's going to be lit, and I'm really excited for it.
All right, and how can we find you on social media?
You can find me on social media at Cypress and Co. Music. So, like, I think there's this design company called Cypress and Co. I hope they don't sue me for also using their name. I didn't realize this till after I started Cypress and Co. But that's why we have the music on the end, is because we don't want you to go find them. We want you to find us. So, Cypress and Co. Music.
Yeah, we play another independent Christian duo named Ink and Thread, and there are 1,000 design companies named Ink and Thread on Instagram and Facebook. It is nearly impossible to find their band pages organically. So final question, what is the last thing you want everybody to know? And this can be anything, spanning anything about yourself, about the music, about the EP, anything goofy, serious. You get the last word.
I love puns. I love them so much. I make puns on the daily. And one time my hometown was having a pun competition and they're like, submit your puns here. Unlimited submissions. So of course I submitted 10 puns to this competition. I was like, surely if I send my top 10, at least one of them will win first place. Sadly, of all the puns that I sent in, I thought one would win first place, but no pun intended. Get it? No pun intended. But like, no pun in 10 did win the competition. So good.
And with that groaner, our interview is over. Thank you so much, Rochelle from Cypress and Co., for joining us and sharing about your upcoming EP album. It is coming out again this Friday, January 31st. It is called Shadows EP by Cypress and Co. 3 of the songs have already been released as singles, and you can hear them right now. You can go find them on YouTube or all those other places, Spotify and whatnot. But they also have been playing on Back Row Radio all the time, so you can hear it on our station as well. But the full EP comes out this Friday, so make sure you're on the lookout for it. It is going to be worth the buy, I promise you. This is going to be a big artist. I can feel it. I'm honored that she spent some time with us, but you're in on the ground floor is what I'm saying. Get this EP because Cypress & Co. is going places. And hey, you're one of the company, you know? The least you can do is have the album. You know what I'm saying?
250 feet deep in a cave of my destruction. My escape plan is still under construction. Cause I know what I want, but I don't know how to get there. To be honest, I'm not afraid of the dark. I'm scared, I'm scared, I'm scared of the people I know and the ones that I don't, and of myself. I'm scared, I'm scared, I'm scared. When the scene comes up close, I step back and I'm trapped in the underworld. Trapped
started.